This is some work that is a continuation. Obviously, by the title, it's an update on some work that I did last year. I've got a bunch of new material, though, here. So this is our center here. I have to acknowledge Glenn Johnson's efforts in this. He's just been promoted to a research support scientist from a technician, but he's been doing work that I wouldn't trade for a postdoc. This is our 37 cellulose-octose or cellulose chain segment model. You're looking down the cellulose fiber axis in this picture here, and it's been subjected to energy minimization by the AMBER-9 program using the special set of parameters in this empirical force field that were developed for carbohydrates by Rob Wood's group in Athens, where we spent some time after Katrina. And this picture is similar in terms of the surfaces you see, which are kind of disrupted here compared to the center, which looks more or less like the crystal structure that this minimization calculation started from. It's similar to the molecular dynamics crystals that we showed last year here, but instead of doing simulations for 10 nanoseconds, which takes the whole Earth of computer time, this is something that's done in just a very short time. I think an hour or something would lead to this result here. And this fact that the surfaces are disrupted suggests to us that there's not enough long-term order in here to give the same crystal pattern that cellulose actually does, so that there's something wrong with the calculation. This is the same sort of result that is observed by other workers if they've surrounded the model with water molecules. So it's like they were attributing this disruption on the surface to the water, but we can reproduce it without the water present. So this distortion of those individual molecules near the surfaces in these calculations can be brought down to a controversy about cellulose and the twofold screw axis, which has been suspect all through the last 70 years or so that people have been fairly sophisticated talking about cellulose crystal structure. And so we're seeing this twisting of the cellulose one chains in the crystals and the crystals themselves. And is this correct? Is this what's really going on? And my colleague at Cornell University, John Brady, believes that these things really are twisting. And so then I'll ask, is the twofold screw axis structure that is observed in most crystalline celluloses intrinsically preferred? Is that a natural shape for the cellulose molecule, or is it the result of crystal packing in the crystal lattices? And just to make sure we're on the same page about the twofold screw axis here, I've drawn a helix here that passes through the O6 atoms in this case, in each either this ball and stick or this sort of space-filling representation here. And you see that there's a, for every point at X, Y, and Z, there's a point at minus X, minus Y, and Z plus a half. So this is the Z distance here and half of the Z distance. So we have a point here and then a point here that is 5.19 angstroms along this axis further down. And so this O6 would be precisely located at the minus X, minus Y, and Z plus a half coordinates compared to this. And that means there's twofold screw symmetry. Now, I'll point out that this intramolecular symmetry can only occur if you have an infinitely long molecule, and we'll be looking later at cellulobiose molecules, for instance, which cannot intrinsically have twofold screw symmetry because the non-reducing glucose ring is not the same chemically as the reducing glucose ring, so they can't be purely symmetrically related. Well, if we take the AMBER-9 program and GlyCam and just do energy minimization for these different with dielectric constants at different values, the isolated molecules do turn into something that approaches the helix. This has got a little bit of a left-handed helix turn with 2.19 residues per turn in a left-handed character. If we reduce the strength of hydrogen bonding, and my long-term understanding of this is that these force fields tend to overestimate the hydrogen bonding strength, and you can reduce that overestimation by increasing the dielectric constant. Now you see we've gotten something that looks even more twisted. But if we go up to a dielectric constant of 8, all of a sudden we've got something that looks almost exactly two-fold screw symmetry. So this is clearly a force field dependent problem because we've changed the force field by changing these dielectric constants. And I'll add also that this is heresy among most molecular models to increase the dielectric constant. Well, this is a model that we made with the MM4 program, which is developed also in Athens, Georgia, at the University of Georgia by Professor Allinger there. And we've minimized the same model here, and you see there's none of this fuzzing on the surfaces, so forth. It was a result that was too good to be true, and so I haven't put a lot of emphasis on that. But if we take a look at the center molecules in either of these models, we can measure the distance from the O4 atoms in this chain to the O4 atoms in this chain to get the B-axis dimension, same way going in this direction to get the A-axis dimension, and then measure from here to here to here and get the gamma angle. And in this chart here, it shows how these different models worked out to reproduce the cell structure, and that MM4 model that you just saw had zero deviation in these A, B, and C dimensions of the unit cell, and there's no symmetry in the models, so these would be 90 degrees to start with, and the gamma angle is the one that's most is going to change most. And again, in the MM4 model, it didn't change very much, but you see in the CHARM CSFF model that my colleague John Brady's group used, they got quite a bit of a change in the A dimension. That's 0.7 angstroms there, and a 6.5 degree angle in the gamma angle. And going through these other with these different dielectric constants, we'd get a better result here in the cell length deviations, but then we get an angle problem here, which we didn't have with the dielectric one. So none of this made me particularly happy. We went to a quantum mechanical study in two dimensions. This is brand new work that Glenn has been carrying out. So we only got two dimensions. The three-dimensional calculations are even beyond our nice cluster of computers that we have now. But they were better with the Hartree-Fock 631G star than the Amber things. And we recently completed some studies with the PBE density functional quantum mechanics theory, and this fairly good basis set here. And here we see that the B unit cell dimension only increased a couple hundredths of an angstrom. The C axis grew a little bit more than you'd like, maybe, but it's still pretty good. And interestingly, the hydrogen bond between O6 and O3, this hydrogen bond here, the hydrogen bond length itself actually decreased in this minimization, but the interoxygen distance increased, and the angle improved here to 164. And you can see that if you look down the chain axis, there's here there's a little gap here that the chains rotated a little bit towards each other here, and this allowed this angular improvement here. So these sorts of things are very dependent on the actual method of calculation, and we're continuing to try and improve that, and I think that's the main cause for some of these problems that we're seeing. Well, now I'll switch from the modeling study to looking at crystal structures, where we can get these values very accurately from small molecules such as cellobios. And if we want to say what the helical shape of a cellulose model would be, we need the X, Y, and Z coordinates of the atoms in the cellulose ring. We need the phi and the psi twists. That's the twists of these two glucose rings about their bonds to the glycosidic angle. And we need to know this bond angle, the covalent bond angle here. And once we know those, we can put them into some formulas that were published some 55 years ago in Japan. And you can compare against the phi, and for any phi and psi value here and here on these axes, you can calculate what the shapes of the helix would be. And this line here, this diagonal line, is the two-fold screw axis line here that will concentrate. And this is that same line here, and I've plotted one beta cellulose, for instance, is very close to this line. The cellulose 3 sub 1 is very close to the line. Here's another 1 beta model. There are two different linkages in the corner and center chains. And cellulose 2 also has a two-fold screw axis. So that it isn't perfect, but you see the end value of 2.05 here, pretty much right-handed and left-handed, pretty much includes all of the two-fold screw cellulose structures and the 1-alpha structures, which are not technically two-fold screw. The cellotriose and cellotetrose, again, are not pure two-fold screw axis symmetries, but they're very, very close, and they give the same diffraction pattern as cellulose too. So anyway, this is that same dashed line, and I've just shown some of our Hartree-Fock 631 G-star energy calculations there, just to put the dots in context. And all of these dots correspond to the phi and psi values that are observed in molecules such as cellobios or lactose that are very similar to cellulose having a beta-1,4 linkage, having a bunch of hydroxyl groups, and so forth. So these molecules here, these phi and psi values here are very close to the two-fold screw axis line. These over here are not. These here do not have O3O5 hydrogen bonding in them. So that's an interesting point. A lot of these do, but some of them don't. Most of these do, but some of them don't as well, which we'll see in a moment. So this is a new graph here, and it shows the distance from that diagonal line in a perpendicular direction to that. And so the points that are essentially within 2 degrees of the diagonal line are, here's -2 and +2 degrees. There are 13 structures that are within 2 degrees of that diagonal line of having a two-fold screw axis. And there are a bunch of ones that are more left-handed and some that are a little bit more right-handed than perfect two-fold screw axis. But this is certainly a popular form. I didn't include the cellotriose and tetrose, which give the cellulose 2 diffraction pattern, because those structures might also be influenced by packing. Well, this is a study that we did where we just put phi and psi values at B or at A when we had the hydroxyl groups in a bunch of different positions and just let them minimize. And I found a bunch of structures here that came out very close to the two-fold screw axis. So they moved from this shape over to this shape along the two-fold screw axis line. And this point here is especially interesting because the same structure that started here went to here and started from here went to here. So this area near the two-fold screw line really seems like an important shape. And these are some of those shapes that were near the two-fold screw line. You see there's a big variety in the hydrogen bonding here. This one doesn't have the O3 donating to O5, for instance. Here it does. This one is similar to this one, except the bonds have been reduced, and there are just lots of variety here, and all of these are very, very close to the two-fold screw structure. Here's a structure that gave an N value of 2.04, and yet it's acetylated, And it doesn't have any hydrogen bonds because of the acetate groups, but the other part of this molecule has a very different twist at the phi and psi values, giving almost a threefold left-handed helix. So there's quite a variety in shapes here, but this shape turns out to be a fairly common shape. And this is one here where we have it would be almost impossible to pack into those flat sheets that the twofold screw axis produces in cellulose molecules. So this is an axial group here, another axial group here. It's a mannopyranose, and that's why the C2 groups are axial. Also, there's a GGO6, which would keep it in from forming these flat ribbons, which would have a twofold helical shape as the best packing possibility. And again, we have something very, very close to a twofold screw axis that's just because that seems to be a low energy shape. Well, this is that lowest energy shape that we found with that minimization quantum mechanics study, and it does have a shape very much like native cellulose in terms of this O6 being here in the TG position, making an ice hydrogen bond to O2. O3 is donating to O5 here, and we also have a nice ring of hydrogen bonds here that they're not very good hydrogen bonds, but it's they're these two continuous rings, and they give a very low energy in our modeling studies. And if we use that molecule to make one of these phi-psi maps, we show that it is a very low energy shape. This is the minimum shape for that molecule, and I've plotted the crystal structures. Previously, we used a lot of different variations here on that other map that I showed you earlier, and so it accommodated more of these structures at a low energy. But if we just use this one, that molecular shape to do the calculations, then they fall on this. There are a few that fall on this nice low energy region right here. That's a quarter of a kilocalorie, that line. But some of the others are quite a bit higher in energy. So in conclusion, the method of calculating the energy is critical to the prediction of the observed structures. We've been using the carbohydrate-aware empirical force fields, the best ones we can get, as far as we know, and Hartree-Fock theory versions of electronic structure theory. Now it looks like we need to use a density functional method. And although we'll need to do molecular dynamics in the future, some of the flaws of these modeling programs can be quickly revealed with energy minimization. And it looks like a bunch of both the model structures and experimental structures do have something that approximates twofold screw axis symmetry. And so therefore, the twofold screw symmetry doesn't seem to be an inherently strained conformation, even though that's been a mindset for people for many years. So anyway, I'll take a question or two. If everyone isn't numb.
going back to Gary's talk, do you add water in these couplings?
We have done some studies with water, but the water adds an enormous amount to the amount of computer time, which my colleague John Brady has used up the San Diego Supercomputer Center and is now going to a larger supercomputer at Oak Ridge to do the calculations. So we've tried to be as economical as we could, and it was of great interest to us in these molecular dynamics simulations to learn what the minimal amount of carbohydrate we needed to get a good conclusion, and the energy minimizations don't allow an explicit water calculation, and the quantum mechanics don't allow an explicit water.
Water in the crystal structure, so...
Well, there's no water inside the crystal.
Okay.
I mean, it's determined, and just like there's no water in the cellulose crystal, there's no water in the cellulose crystals. There is a cellulose hydrate crystal, but that's not the normal one. So we're looking at the interface of the cellulose crystals with water to try and understand the properties. But what we've seen is that the models look the same whether or not there's water around them. So it's a function of the modeling program. That
because looking at your models, it's just a gross comment, but there's more green than there is red. And cellulose, I think of as very hydrophilic. And so
The green is there because it's a... All the bonds are green in those drawings, I guess. It is a hydrophilic, and one of the things that we're learning a lot about are CHO hydrogen bonds on the surfaces that you think are hydrophobic. So it is a hydrophilic system. There's no question. But the cellulose can order the water molecules around.
Yeah.
So. And there's nothing in particular, since the water is so mobile, it doesn't seem to affect the structure of the cellulose. It may well affect other properties.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Because if you want to use these models to predict how other molecules might bind.
Yes, well, that's why we're trying to get really good models so that we can carry out those studies with some conviction and understanding.
Yeah.
And that's why we continue to put our efforts into getting better and better models.
Yeah.
So. Okay, I think that we should move on to...